Hello, you're listening to Sean from Galactic Chat, and today we're doing something a little bit different. With me, I have Alex.
Hi.
David. Okay, we did have David. Helen.
Yes, I'm here. Hi.
Hi, and Mark.
Hello. And you do have David. It's just, you know, as an IT professional, I'm really good with computers, and I press the mute button.
Classic.
Classy.
Well, personally, I'm surprised that my internet connection is handling four people, so we're good.
Yeah, I'm okay. Well done, rural South Australia.
And together, this motley crew makes up a Dittmar Award-winning podcast.
Right.
Okay. Well, congratulations again to everyone. Let's talk about the Dittmar for Best Fan Production in any medium. How did it feel at the time? Did you ever in your wildest dreams think we would be there? Can anyone remember what was said? And how does it feel a couple of weeks on? So let's air some of our reflections. And I'll go with Mark first.
Well, I know when I was sitting in the audience, I don't know about any of you, but I was sitting there thinking, oh, three Hugo Award-nominated podcasts. I really like the writer and the critic, but, gee, wouldn't it be good if Galactic Suburbia got up? And, oh, the Coot Street podcast hasn't. Oh, hang on a second. Why is Sean getting up? Oh, hang on. It's us. So that was a big surprise from my perspective. Don't know about any of the rest of you.
Yeah, it was a total shock for me. I would have worn a fancier dress if I thought we had any chance of winning it. Yeah. Wow.
Very exciting.
Well, I do have to admit, I was very surprised. As Mark said, with a number of Hugo-nominated podcasts in the category, it seemed like a bit of a long shot for us, especially with the history of, you know, Pride and the Critics done very well in previous years. And that didn't help that our name starts with the same word as one of the other ones, because when they said Galactic, I thought, Galactic Suburbia, but I was obviously very excited, very proud, and I was happy enough to see my name on the same list as all those other people, let alone to win a Dittmar in that category.
It was my first Dittmar, partial Dittmar. Is it anyone else's first?
Oh, absolutely, yes, my first as well.
Yeah.
Mine as well, yeah.
Well, it might have been your first at that stage, Sean, but not about 5 seconds later.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that was good that one came directly after the other, because I didn't have time to freak out, really. So
yes, you did.
Okay, maybe a little bit. Maybe a little bit. See, none of the audience would have known this if you hadn't let on.
That's what I'm here for.
Excellent. Now, I wanted to move into... Oh, before I move on, of course, yes, I was entirely surprised. Not that we don't do excellent work, all as sort of individuals in our own rooms asking questions, but, I was surprised because of the wealth of competition. Like I think I said on the night, I would have liked to have said, they were all worthy opponents. If we can call them opponents.
Can we say a big thank you again to everyone who nominated us and voted for us? Because that's really nice.
And a big thank you to all the interviewees as well.
Yeah, and Sean, who does all that work.
Yeah, absolutely.
And
you can keep that coming, that's fine.
And to Amanda, who actually had a trophy for each of us, that was... A bit surprising that they had that many.
Yeah, that was really nice. Yeah.
Yeah, that was cool.
It saved a certain game of paper, scissor, rock to see who took the.
I think we just would have given it to you actually, until you got your next one. Yeah, then it would have been tight for the rest of us.
I might have wrestled him for it.
I'd already had one snatched out of my hands by Tahani, so it was nice to. to have one that I can hang on to for a little while.
It's funny, it kind of means a lot to my family in that too. They're like, oh, wow, so you're really doing something, which is cool.
Yeah, I had a very similar reaction when I
when I got home as well. Oh, so this whole science fiction thing that you're into, well, that actually, wow, that's a thing.
People actually listen.
Really? Cool. See, I didn't get that.
Yeah. Oh, well, when you do take time away from family events, come and lock yourself in a room, and it is great to have some sort of tangible thing that you can go, yeah, you know, this is what I've been doing with my time. Not that I've ever felt that, you know, that time's begrudged, but just it's nice to be able to say, you know, this is a sign that what I'm doing is valued. So
yeah,
and plus it's really nice to have a Kathleen Jennings design sitting on my shelf because she does such beautiful work.
Yep.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. I've set it up so I can see it from my desk whenever I look up.
No, I was going to say whoever decided on that for the trophies, absolute genius. For the same reasons, great to have Kathleen Jennings artwork on your shelf. Now, if I can move us along to the next question. Some of us are old hands at this podcasting business, but some new folks came on this year. And I'll start with the new folk. I wanted to ask, what's been great about interviewing authors? Have you been nervous? Do you still cringe at hearing your own voice? So I'll go with Helen first.
Okay. I hate listening to these recordings afterwards. I listen to them once to make sure it's all there, and then I don't listen to it again. But I love chatting to people. I think the better I know them, the more relaxed I am. But then talking to Ken McLeod was great because he was just so nice.
Okay, and moving on to Mark as another sort of newbie to podcasting.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I found the research part of it to be very interesting. I, for instance, with Jason Narong, I've met him a few times and I'd spoken to him at conventions and the like, but then actually going and researching sort of what he's done and where he's been, same with Keith Stevenson, it was really fun to sort of understand someone a little bit more than you did before. So that part of it was really good. And I must admit, with my interviews, I was so concerned about getting the technology part of it right that it didn't occur to me to be nervous until after we got started. So.
Okay, and Alex, you're, I won't say old hand, probably not,
sure,
not the right word,
fine.
But experienced podcaster.
Yeah.
How did you find this? Was it different to doing Galactic Suburbia in any great way?
It is different because, I mean, we've been doing Galactic Suburbia for about 4 years now, so we kind of know how to riff off one another pretty easily. And recording with three is really different from recording with two, and also very different from recording with four. When you're interviewing someone, it's very obvious that it's a back-and-forth process, whereas with three people sitting around having a conversation, it's a little bit harder to know whether that's a gap that you need to fill or if it's a gap where somebody's gathering their thoughts. So that's been an interesting process. And like Helen and Mark have said, the whole kind of interviewing process, doing the research and talking to different people is a really different sort of experience from Galactic Suburbia. So yeah, it's been good, and I have to say, I've almost never listened to any podcast I've been on because I can't stand the sound of my own voice.
Isn't that interesting that we all hate listening to our own voice?
So I've had to listen to a couple of bits of Galactic Suburbia because I've been doing a couple of transcriptions, yeah. And it just makes me cringe. So I'm really sorry, everybody, in case you don't like the sound of my voice as much as I hate my own. Yeah.
It is a truth of the human condition that everybody hates the sound of their recorded voice.
I'm glad it's not just me.
and David, what are your thoughts on
I agree completely about the sound of my own voice. I did radio for, I think, about 5 years, and I never hated listening to myself, and podcasting hasn't changed that. The thing I enjoy most about doing Collective Chat is the fact it gives you an excuse to email and stalk people that you admire so much.
Yeah, right.
It's great to be able to get to chat to some people who are, role models or whatever, without, coming across as completely crazy. So the research thing, I found I feel a lot more comfortable when I know something about the person I'm interviewing, which I think is pretty obvious would be the case. But, you know, it's really good, I think, as Mark said, to be able to look into, you know, people's, you know, their history, their sort of catalogue of work, and be able to ask some informed questions. And I think interviewees, once they realise that you're taking it seriously, that really makes them relax and open up a bit. Probably the thing I found hardest adjusting to is that when I did radio, it was very much the people who were presenting were equals in how much talking you were meant to do. But with interviewing, you really have to take a back seat. And I do like talking, as most of you would know. So when you're interviewing, being, you know, making sure that you don't, even if you want to have a conversation with a person, that you're asking the questions and giving them the space to respond, because the people who are listening to hear those people, not the interviewer.
No, I agree. And that's probably something that I can struggle with if on different occasions. Sometimes the person who's talking is just so interesting, they get you thinking about something, and then you want to talk about it, and then you realise that, well, you, as in me, realises that, you know, you're not the one that's being interviewed. So thankfully I'm also the one that does the producing, so I can get to cut myself out.
And that's maybe one of the better things about interviewing people who you don't know. I mean, you would have edited my interview with Karen, and Karen and I have known each other for quite a while. She was one of the first people I met in the community, so we were having a conversation as well as doing an interview. But when I interviewed, you know, say NK Jemison, or because I didn't really know her that well, it was much more of a formal interview, which both of them have their strengths, but I guess not knowing the interviewee cuts out that, you know, desire to just have a conversation, oh, what have you been up to, sort of thing.
Do you find you're worrying about what's being recorded, in the sense that, like, I'm introducing a lot of ums and stumbling over my words at the moment here. Does that ever distract you? Mark, how do you go with that, being fairly new to the game?
Yeah, there's. I do worry about that a bit, and also having questions written out on pieces of paper and shuffling them around, and if they answer something that you were going to ask a little bit later, and trying to keep track of all of that while still being engaged in the interview itself, I found a bit challenging as I was going through.
So you're panicking a bit, thinking, oh, is it still recording? Hang on, what did they just say?
Yeah, that's right. And actually, that's kind of answering sort of the question I was going to ask in three questions' time, and should I cut that question, or should I ask something different? Or, you know, trying to keep all that. And I, frankly, I'm not a multitasker by inclination, so I found that capacity to multitask a bit of a challenge.
I just trust the sound. Sorry, Alex. I just trust the sound guy to fix it. Or like,
yeah.
I did my first interview live the other week. I went to Rosaline Love's house. I've never done an interview before where I came home with a bag of lemons. It was very exciting. But it was really weird, both because, as Mark was saying, with the whole shuffling of your paper, because I had all of my questions pre-written, it was really weird because I actually had to look at Rosaline, because otherwise that's really weird. And so I'm sort of looking down at the paper going, is this uncomfortable yet? And then it was the first time I'd used the equipment, and so I was on the tram home, and I was emailing, as you do, on your phone, and my husband was like, so did it work? And I wrote back, I have no idea. And he said, well, why don't you check it? And I'm like, oh, hell no. Not until I get home, because if it didn't work, I don't want to have to make a scene on the tram, because that would be really bad. I was so nervous, and it took me like an hour to get home. And I got home, and I gave him the thing and said, you check it. I was so worried. And it was fine, I hope, I think. Sean will tell me soon.
It should be okay. to let everyone else in on the story, Alex uploaded it and said that it's there for you. It worked. I'm really happy. And then I downloaded it and was in a different format. So I spent about 20 minutes shuffling around trying to convert it, and worked out that you can use Media Player to burn a CD and then re-import from
the
CD.
Oh my goodness! Okay, that's crazy.
as an MP3 and then slow it down to half speed because everyone sounds like they're chipmunks when you do that. So.
Okay, now I feel really bad.
But I'm going to use the MP3 version, so that's okay. But all right. Did anyone have any questions of me? I've got one final question there that we can go to talk about. But did you want to ask me anything? Because I know you guys file the stories, and some of you might have some production experience. But did you want to ask any questions? Did it?
This is why you're a producer. You can cut it out. It's fine.
Or maybe leave it in, make it seem real and edgy.
How much do you spend on the interviews?
Oh, I did a quick check the other day. I would be listening through to it and cutting out. I like to cut out most of the ums and ahs, although I tend to leave a few in just so it sounds a bit more natural and a bit more live. So, so that would add maybe about 10 minutes on to the time of the podcast. So, you know, that's about 30 to 40 minutes, and then it's uploading it onto the Podbean site, which can be troublesome sometimes on a 3G connection. Will drop out, but no. Other than that, that's probably about how long. Unless we have real problems, which have happened on a couple of podcasts where things drop out, and you've got to sort of make things sound like that answer came right after that question. It might not be exactly the same way, but I haven't had complaints yet. So there we go.
Well, I'm impressed. Thank you.
And you won an award after all, Sean, so it must have been going okay.
Well, yes, okay. I'll take that award. All right. I wanted to get each of you to perhaps think, and I'll choose a victim who won't have too much time to think, but about their most memorable interview so far. That's not saying it's the best, but perhaps the most memorable. And then... we'll do that first, just your most memorable interview, and I'll choose David as the first victim, and everyone else can think.
Well, we're talking about the difference between live interviews and non-live ones, and one of the things is when you're live, you can actually see the person, so there's the body language thing. But I was doing a Skype interview, and the person asked me, could I turn on my camera? Because they didn't really like doing voice-only interviews because they couldn't read all the visual cues. The only problem was it was because it was reasonably late in the evening. I was sitting there in my Superman pajamas and had to turn on my camera and interview an author who I admire very much and sit there in my Superman PJs and pretend to be serious.
That's why I'm glad none of you have asked for camera work tonight.
This is why we don't do Galactic Suburbia by video.
Well, my excuse is that the connection won't handle it, but seeing as connecting with all four of you, maybe I can't use that excuse anymore. All right, let's see who's next.
I think it's a beanie on, so,
All right, we'll go with the signature beanie person. Tell us, Helen, what's your most memorable? I've got an idea about who it might be.
I can't choose. I'm not good at choosing. They've all been lovely and they've all been different. I can't choose a favourite. Sorry.
Well, perhaps not a favourite, but what's one that's stuck in your mind for whatever reason?
I don't know. Well, Tracy O'Hara was first. That was nice having a chat to her. She always makes me feel comfortable. And I guess it's lovely to bridge that distance as well and talk to people who I usually only talk to at conventions. Yeah, so I'll go with Tracy O'Hara.
Okay, then. Fair enough. Oh, let's say Mark. Mark, what's you've done a couple, so... By all means, you can mention both of them. But,
yes, I'm not as prolific as the rest. The Keith Stevenson interview was interesting because I was convinced that doing a face-to-face interview would be much better quality, you know, not going over the internet and face-to-face would be much, much better. And Keith and I work relatively near to each other, so I sort of set up to meet him. And, of course, the background noise was awful. And when I listened back to it, there was all of this cluttering and clanking and people walking past and all that kind of stuff. So I kind of felt a bit bad because Keith had been great and given me some great answers to things, and I was listening to the quality of it back and just sort of cringing and realizing that I'd probably made a giant mistake organizing a face-to-face interview where I couldn't get a nice quiet room somewhere. So that was a bit off-putting. But that was it was interesting to talk to Keith because of the, you know, his writing is there, his publishing's there, and sort of he was very raconteur man about town when it came to the different aspects of speculative fiction. So that was really interesting. And of course, Jason just knows, has thought deeply about the horror genre and, you know, the role of the vampire through history and in modern society and the reflection of society in the monsters that we sort of bring to the fore, all that kind of stuff. So I could probably have listened to him talk for a couple of hours on some of that. So, yeah, they were both fantastic, really good interviews.
And before I go on to Alex, has anyone else had that experience where you feel like you could just keep talking forever if you had the time to do so?
Yeah, sure. Yeah.
Okay. I should have asked an open question.
I mean, there's so much to talk about, isn't there, when it comes to the genres and, yeah, the topics that we're passionate about. And, yeah.
Has anyone wanted to, when events happen post the interview, you know, a couple of months later, you sort of almost want to go back and ask an interviewee some follow-up questions based on things that have sort of happened subsequently? I've certainly had that feeling a couple of times where I thought, oh, now I wish I could ask Keith about X or Jason about Y or things like that.
Yeah.
Yes, most definitely, usually when they've brought out a book.
Yeah.
and I've interviewed them early. Or, you know, when they've had something deeply interesting to say. Particularly probably somebody like Tansy, who I interviewed when somebody's doing something all the time and different things all the time, you sort of want to talk to them about those things. But, we have to spread ourselves out, I suppose, on Galactic Chat so that we're not interviewing the same people all the time, because I think we could probably fill podcasts with the group of people, for example, the people we met at Continuum. So that'd be quite easy. But, Alex, go on.
No, it's okay. You can come back to me in a second if you want.
Damn it, I've cut somebody off.
I think we can forgive you.
Just this once. Yeah, that's your one cut off, Sean.
It's just how podcasts work, man. You're always cutting people off.
But you see, now I've stepped out from behind the curtain. You know how bad I am at this job, you see. I make myself sound good.
Can we call you the great and powerful Sean?
He insists on that, It gets quite off-putting after a while.
Most certainly, I could get used to that. Does that come with 40K a year, The Great and Powerful Sean?
If you really like it, it'll actually come with the NBN.
Oh, don't talk to me about
it. It comes with a dip bar.
Yes, comes with a dip bar. All right.
Look, I don't think I'm alone in that I find talking about writing much more fun than actually sitting down and writing. So doing an interview with someone and talking about things to do with writing, you know, or publishing is just very interesting to me. So I could quite happily, you know, talk to people about it for hours. So I guess the issue is just keeping on point and not going on for like 3 or 4 hours, because I guess we can only use a certain amount of time for the interview, and there's always. Yeah, true. Well, at Sean's end, definitely. Yeah. And there's always someone else to be interviewed, so...
That brings up an interesting thought. We've got three writers here, and I'm just wondering, in terms of podcasting and training yourself in an interview situation, do you think that being on Galactic Chat has helped you when you're on the other side of the microphone or on the other side of the questions? We'll go with Helen first, just to make it easy.
When I'm being interviewed?
Yeah, have you had that experience where
you... I don't think I've been interviewed. Thank goodness.
No.
Me either.
Verbally, But I guess maybe it's given me a bit more confidence for doing panels and things. I guess just because I have that practice of, you know, verbal interchange about writing and genres and things.
Being able to talk and think about two different things at the same time.
Exactly. When I spend too much time just writing and not necessarily talking.
So, Mark or David, have you had an experience where you've been interviewed yet for a podcast or in a sort of face-to-face interview situation where you think that podcasting may have helped? Or perhaps even if you don't have that, take that question wider into, like Helen has done with panels. So we'll go with David first and see what you have to say.
I haven't really been interviewed. I think I
someone David, we'll have to interview each other.
Yeah, that sounds good. I mean, it makes me think about my own, you know, my own responses, and when I'm formulating questions for other writers, it makes me think about how would I answer those questions. But I just get a lot out of listening to people who are probably further along in the journey than me, getting to listen to how they answer those questions. I think I've been able to take back into my own writing when people talk about their process or things like that. So it's been beneficial, but I know I'm not very famous, so I don't know how I'll go when I get interviewed.
and Mark?
Look, I'm even less famous than David, so certainly no sort of speculative fiction interviews. But sometimes for my day job, I do need to be on the other side of that kind of questioning. So yeah, it has been interesting to. For me, it was almost the opposite. Normally, I'm getting asked questions of, so it was very interesting to get on the asking questions side of the microphone, and it has probably given me a better insight into what the poor people go through when they're coming up with questions for me. So I try to be a bit kinder now when I'm answering them.
I love being on the asking questions side. I think that's my preferred side because I like hearing what other people have to say. So yeah,
it's a position of power. But Sean, you're being a little bit humble here because you're published as well.
Yeah, what's this about?
Yeah.
What's this dividing writers?
I'm going to do that too. Well, actually, I'm deflecting the questions away from myself. I thought you guys knew. But and Alex, I'll bring you in on this. Although we're both have a teaching background, and we're both teaching at the moment, so we do a lot of standing up and talking, and I imagine you get asked a lot of questions, because I certainly did today.
Yeah.
So in terms of, let's just say podcasting in general, because you've got that wider experience, what do you think the benefits might be for writers? You can say for writers, you write non-fiction. So.
I think it can be useful. Well, I mean, Helen was saying before that she, you know, writes more than she talks about writing sometimes, and I think that actually it is useful for writers to stop and think about what their audience or what their peers are thinking and saying and how they want to interact with them. So I'm quite sure that, I mean, as you say, I'm an English teacher, and right now I'm trying to get students to think about why did you make those choices, and trying to articulate that is really very difficult. So I think that encouraging writers not that any of them aren't critically thinking about their own work, being able to articulate that to an audience, and especially a non-fiction writing audience, I think can surely only be beneficial for them in thinking about their own processes. And I'm quite sure that, it's such a cliche, but you to think about the rise of social media and all those sorts of things, people are fascinated by the process, they're fascinated by insights into authors and authors' lives and so on. So doing interviews like Galactic Chat allows is just another way, in a really positive way, of allowing that sort of connection to happen. So I hope that all of our interviewees have found it a positive experience, and that they've enjoyed connecting with us as their fans and with the people who listen to it as their fans in a whole bunch of different ways. So I guess that's what I'm hoping that writers can get out of it when they're interviewed. So, yeah.
Alex makes a really good point there, because the days where you had your sort of your writer who was a hermit and lived away from publicity and all that sort of stuff. I mean, I'm trying to think of some names, but you know, the writers who are notoriously reclusive and all that sort of thing. I think those days are gone. I think there's an expectation from publishers that writers do a bit of promotion of themselves and of their work. And I think audiences are used now to learning more about the writers that they read. People want a little bit of, I guess, the backstage stuff. So, yeah, hopefully the people that we do interview, it's a way that they can bolster their own sort of audience and their own promotion. And hopefully that's something we can help them with.
There is a little bit of me that's sad about that, because you couldn't have a James Tiptree Jr.
Yeah. Or
really, you couldn't really very effectively have someone like that in today's climate. It just wouldn't work.
But wouldn't it be fascinating if somebody actually tried? I mean, the social
actually,
media...
Actually, I take that back. There are some people who have made their name while being utterly reclusive. But, and so maybe Sheldon would have managed it because her writing was so brilliant. But be very...
And, you know, the social media and websites and the like giving you the opportunity to put a shell forward that isn't actually you. So, you know, you can imagine someone using social media to perpetrate that kind of, I'll use the word deception, but if you
like
know what I mean.
Character.
Yeah. Oh, okay. No, I take that back. Feel free to leave that in, Sean. I like being schooled.
I was going to say, all of you have covered that fairly well, but yeah, that's one of the things that I sort of like doing with the podcast is it's great to interview, say, Kate Forsyth or Margot Lanigan, who will have had, you know, far more experienced interviewers than myself asking them questions. You know, they get television interviews, that sort of thing. But to also give perhaps somebody who's, you know, this might be their first book or their first, you know, run of stories where they've hit some success, and to give them that opportunity to get some practice in and you know, make some mistakes if they make mistakes in a friendly environment where they're going to get edited out. So and the other thing I like about the podcast is, you know, we rarely ever hit our limit for how much we can upload to the site per month, just because I tend to make the podcasts fairly small. But we do have that leeway to explore with a writer or an interviewee a little bit longer interview, where I know that when I've been quoted for things on radio, they will chop the interview up into bits and pieces, and you think, oh, well, I gave them a half-hour interview and they used 5 minutes. So, I that's what I like doing with the podcast is giving people that practice.
And I reckon it would be good to be interviewed by us, because we're such fans of what we interview people about. Like, we really love the work. So that's got to be kind of nice for the authors that we're interviewing.
I hope so.
Well, I think so too. And there was an interview that I heard somebody gave to Margot Lanigan, and I can't remember the name of the interviewer, but they weren't somebody from within the community, and it was quite starkly obvious that they didn't know a lot about science fiction and fantasy. So I think that gives us a bit of an edge in some ways, because you have that... that in-depth knowledge, you can go past the 101 stuff, I guess, is what I'm saying there. Yeah. All right. Alex, did you have a memorable interview?
Interviewing Rosaline was awesome, going to her house and so on, and I am a fan of hers. But I have to say, actually, that my favourite interview probably so far has been the one with Nikki Sulway, which I believe is coming up this weekend. Because I read Rupetta so recently, and I am such a fangirl, and I've never met her before, so that was exciting. I think I've met most of the other people that I've interviewed. And she was so utterly lovely, and she was so genuinely excited about having won the Tiptree that it was really pleasant to talk to her. She was just still so over the moon about the Tiptree and just excited to talk about it that it was a lot of fun to do. And I think that's in some ways been the most fun interview to do. So yeah, that would be my pick.
I can't wait to hear it.
She's great. She's so cool.
Yeah, it's a really great interview. I picked up an early copy of it somehow, so
it's on Dropbox.
True. God damn it. I hadn't thought of that. Okay. Well, I suppose only to be fair, I do have a couple of memorable ones, and they're probably the ones that have gone wrong for me. I don't know if it comes across, but I get very anxious if things go out of control. I tend to hide it well, I think. But, the first interview I ever did for Galactic Chat, back when it was still being run by the Galactic Suburbia team, was with Kelly Armstrong. I don't know if any of you – it's a fair way back, so you probably haven't listened to it, but she's a New York Times best-selling novelist. She was out in Australia, and I had to ring her room in the hotel – in my lunch hour in between doing other things. So and I was given the wrong number by the publicist, and so I was ringing, I think it was one of the bookshops in Sydney, ringing every sort of 10-15 minutes going, is such and such there? And they go, oh, she's not here for another hour. So, you know, all that sort of nervousness happening, and then you finally get through, and the interviewee on the other end is absolutely lovely. So that's probably one of them. And the other one was ringing Joe Abercrombie and almost getting him out of bed in the morning. So,
nice.
Again, given the wrong information or, you know, crossed wires with publicists. What I find, and you probably find the same thing, is most authors, whether they're bestsellers or they're new on the stage, humans, one, and generally nice people. If we had no barriers, this is the last question, by the way, if we had no barriers, who would you like to interview and why? Presuming they're still alive. I mean, we probably have to keep that barrier in place.
Well, I'll cross Tolkien and Lewis off my list.
I just go with the really obvious one, and that's Ursula Le Guin. A little bit tacky, I suppose, a little bit cliche, but oh my goodness, Ursula Le Guin.
Greg Egan, if he's listening.
Oh, yes!
Yeah, I think I might start opening a book on this one, so see what the likelihood of that happening is. So we've got Ursula Le Guin and Greg Egan. I'm sure he probably listens.
Actually, yeah. I'm not sure whether we've got more chance of Egan or Le Guin. both very dubious.
Okay. Stephen King?
I was going to say Stephen King. You took mine.
Me too.
Stephen. Good mind.
See, I'm desperately looking at my bookshelf at the moment. trying to. William Gibson, for me, would be one.
Yeah.
You could tweet him.
Yeah, I could do that.
Could do, actually.
Helen's already stolen an interview off me, so that's another one. I was going to say Stephen King or maybe J.K. Rowling. She doesn't do much public stuff, so I think she'd be interesting to chat to. Or maybe George Martin.
Okay, yeah. I think that might crash servers, actually. Either of those two probably crash servers. Yeah, I'm just trying to think. Now that mine's been taken, maybe Robin Hobb.
Yeah.
Did I just steal yours, Mark?
No. I was just thinking topically at the moment. I heard her on the Coot Street podcast the other day, but Anne Leckie is obviously hitting a bit of a wave at the moment. It'd be interesting.
Say, Sean has stolen one that I want to do, which is Sean Leckie, because he's suggested her already on our Google document.
There you go. that'll teach me. I should keep up to date with the Google Docs. Right. Note to self.
Don't worry too much, Mark.
It was already there.
I thought I was worse with the Google Doc. Like, I sort of put in my stuff after I've done the interview. Surprise!
Don't worry, I'm leading by example and not doing very much on the Google Doc. Is there anything else that you wanted to cover? We're coming up to 50 minutes, so we've got, say, 10 minutes to go. Yep, go, Mark.
One of the things I've been thinking about a little bit recently is we tend towards authors and writers, which is really good, but I'm finding myself more and more interested with people in other parts of the game, you know, publishing and editing and things along those lines. So I guess if I was looking at people to interview in the future, I'm starting to think about I guess other people that bring other perspectives to the whole speculative fiction game.
Yeah, me too. I'd like to interview a publisher. Yep.
Yeah, I was really pleased, Sean, that you did Jonathan Strahan. I thought that was great. Yeah.
And Tahani the other day, the other week as well. That was great too.
Yeah, no, there's a few other names that pop up. Alex Adsett, I think, having met her at Continuum, I think I've listened to her speak on panels and just chatted to her in the many bars that were charging too much money. it sounds like, you know, knows her spec fic stuff and knows what she does as an agent back to front too. So I think a fairly important person to get in touch with, but I think those are all great ideas. By all means.
so go to the Google Doc is what you're saying.
I think we're probably running pretty well this year. I'm intending to continue doing one every fortnight because that seems to be a pace that I can handle if I do an interview every now and again, and you guys do one every now and again. Well, if that's it, if there's no questions or nothing pops into your head in the next 5 seconds, we might call it a night. And, so, all right then, I'll wrap it up.
Well, Sean, a quick question for you about, about best fan writer, was it the Dittmar? What was that like to win that award?
Very shocking. Very shocking indeed. Yeah, I think you, like has been mentioned before by, I think it was David, you know, just being nominated usually is enough, and just that sort of gives you a little bit of, because nobody in this game, even authors, makes that much money, but, you know, good feedback or, you know, your friend saying, oh, I think you deserve to be nominated is what keeps you going, so... Yeah, I'm sort of slowly coming to terms with having won the best fan writer, because it is, you know, I sort of look at it and go, it's going to be hard to top that. So I don't know if I can quite set my writing sights on Hugo's at the moment, but I'm still enjoying the kudos that I get from the fan writer. And now I feel under pressure to actually do some really good fan writing. Not that I wasn't doing it before, but, you know, people will be looking at you and going, oh, he was...
they'll be saying he's coasted since he got that award. Yeah, that kind of thing.
All right. Well, thank you for that question you just slipped in there quietly at the end.
My pleasure.
Well, I'd like to say... thank you all for coming on, thanking the internet gods for holding out and for the recording gods. Thank you guys for coming on. It's been a pleasure.
Thanks, Sean.
Thanks, Sean.
And thank you, Sean, for all the hard work you do. I think we all really appreciate all the extra work you put in. You're definitely the fearless leader, so
yeah.
We do appreciate it. Absolutely. And also... thank you to the Galactic Suburbia crew for letting us use their be associated with them, because I know from emailing people and asking for interviews that it automatically gives us some credibility, so we appreciate that as well.
Yeah.
Funny.
I should be using that more often then.